Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is so good to see you all today. I'm the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my great joy and pleasure to serve this loving, justice-seeking congregation. Everyone is welcome here. You're welcome here no matter what your age is. You're welcome whether this is your first time or you've been coming for 50 years. You are welcome whether you came with a crowd of people. You're welcome if you came alone. You're welcome no matter who you love or how you express your gender. Everyone is welcome here. So I have a few announcements this morning. One is there's many things that happen in this congregation. This is one way we gather, but we also gather in small groups and classes and other kinds of events, parties. We like parties. And you can see those in the flyer, the e-blast that comes every week for you, and then there's also a monthly announcement, and they're on the slides. And if you're new here today, you're a visitor, you're very welcome, and we have little slips of paper behind your seats, and if you fill those out, you can be getting those documents and learning more. See, Annie is holding that up for us, so you can see what that is. The other announcement that I have today is that the youth are going to be staying in the service with us. And so we're happy to have them with us this morning. There's also coffee after the service downstairs. It's a good time to just chat with people, get to know people. And there's also coffee online. There was a link that came in your order of service that you can get to that coffee online. So I'd like to take everybody to have a minute and greet each other. We're going to sing 10-10, We Give Thanks. If you want to see the music, it's in the teal hymnal.
Precious day.
Good morning. Our cellist lighting this morning is from Eric Walker Wickstrom, who is a UU minister, and Nora is going to light our candle this morning. Here today in this place and with these people, may we listen so that we can hear. May we hear so that we can feel. May we feel so that we can know. And may we know so that we can change ourselves and this world. May this chalice we light our way. Let us say our affirmation together. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
Good morning.
Hello, hello. Good morning. I'm Ashley Ulmer. I'm your lay leader this morning. And this opening reading is by Arianne Goff. Thresholds. We cross them every day, from room to room, from outside to inside, and back again, from here to there, from anywhere to everywhere, from age to age. Each threshold offers an opportunity for change, for renewal, and for transformation, from what we were and what we are to what we can be. In this hour and in this place, we cross a threshold from our day-to-day, everydayness into space and time attuned to others, to the sacred, to the holy, into an awareness of new life, pregnant with possibilities. And how will we be renewed in this moment? How will we be changed by this hour? How will we be transformed through this gathering of beloved community? Come, you longing, thirsty souls. Come, let us worship together. And Spirit of Life, Virginia.
All the children who would like to come forward this morning, we are going to have a story from Frog and Toad. Who knows Frog and Toad? Yay. Oh, I need the book, actually. Okay, the story this morning is cookies. Toad baked some cookies. These cookies smell very good, said Toad. He ate one, and they taste even better, he said. Toad ran to Frog's house. Frog, Frog, cried Toad, taste these cookies that I have made. Frog ate one of the cookies. These are the best cookies I've ever eaten, said Frog. Frog and Toad ate many. Oh, it might be turned off, guys. Sorry. I haven't done this in a while. Okay, there we go. Frog and Toad ate many cookies, one after another. You know, Toad, said Frog, with his mouth full, I think we should stop eating. We will soon be sick. You are right, said Toad. Let us eat one last cookie, and then we will stop. Frog and Toad ate one last cookie. There were many cookies left in the bowl. Frog, said Toad, let us eat one very last cookie. And then we will stop. Frog and Toad ate one very last cookie. We must stop eating, cried Toad as he ate another. Yes, said Frog, reaching for a cookie. We need willpower. What is willpower? Asked Toad. Willpower is trying very hard not to do something that you really want to do, said Frog. You mean like trying not to eat all of these cookies? Asked Toad. Right, said Frog. Frog put the cookies in a box. There, he said, now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog tied some string around the box. There, he said, now we will not eat it. Oh, wait. We're missing the tying the string. Sorry, everybody. Now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can cut the string and open the box, said Toad. That is true. Frog got a ladder. He put the box on a high shelf. There, said Frog, now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can climb the ladder and take the box down from the shelf and cut the string and open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog climbed the ladder and took the box down from the shelf. He cut the string and opened the box. Frog took the box outside. We're missing a whole other box picture, too. Of going outside and throwing the bird out in a loud voice. And he said, hey, birds, here are cookies. Birds came from everywhere. They picked up all the cookies in their beaks and flew away. Now we have no more cookies to eat, said Toad sadly. Not even one. Yes, said Frog, but we have lots and lots of willpower. You may keep it all, Frog, said Toad. I am going home now to bake a cake. So we will now sing our children to their classes. Oh, not the youth are staying, but the elementary and preschool kids are going to class today. So.
So much to be grateful for, so much. First off, having our youth stay in Sunday service today is wonderful. And that is our new tradition on the first Sunday of the month, you should know. Second, this morning's offering is a special Donate the Basket collection for beloved Asheville and post-hurricane relief. So just to add to our gratitude and giving experience this morning, I have a word for you. The word is dynamism. Can you say it with me?
Dynamism,
according to Oxford Dictionary, is the quality of being characterized by vigorous activity and progress. Philosophically, dynamism is the theory that phenomena of matter or mind are due to the action of forces rather than to motion or matter. As we are fresh off our annual auction and to see all the work, time, activity, creativity, and effort that goes into caring for Woof and about Woof and Woofers, I love this word for us. What a vigorously activating force we are. This dynamism we share is because of each of you, whether in giving or receiving. As we put our collection baskets into motion here today, and our youth are going to help us with that, David and Lee, we are grateful for the opportunity to put your financial donations to use, as also for your contemplation of how you can be activating here at Woof with your time, energy, and creativity, as we ever grow our web of connectivity to one another. Ushers, please come.
We may be partially successful with this rating.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. And let's share our affirmation together now. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege.
Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
There is so much joy and happiness in the world. This is a beautiful, beautiful day. And yesterday I got to pick a cabbage for my garden, which is such a pleasure. There are so many pleasures and joys that each of us can take into ourselves and celebrate. But life is also full of pain. It's one of the great challenges of human life that we have joy and we suffer. We suffer from loss, we suffer from changes in expectations, we suffer from disasters. And we hold that each week in our services to remind ourselves of the complexity of life and that it's normal, so that we can hold that gently in our own selves. We also do it every week in services so that we can hold each other in community, that you know you are not alone as you celebrate, and you are not alone as you work through the sorrows and pains of your life. So we would like to invite people to come forward and place a stone into the water to commemorate your joy or your sorrow. It's held in this bath of water like you are held within this community. And so we'd like people to come down this aisle and come down this way to drop your stones. So you may come forward. Oh, and if you would like to just say a sentence to share with the community what's on your mind, that is welcome.
See the people. I want to express joy for all the people who have stepped up to join the Special Music Collective. You're in for a treat today, but I am just full of so much joy at the music that's happening here.
Izzy Hart's 40th birthday.
This is for healing in the division that there is in my family, that it may be healed and all the rest of us.
Two-sided stone. The first side is incredible joy because we have the most absolutely awesomest, wonderfulest RE director in the world. And they're not in here, they're with the kids, but 40th birthday for Liz, Izzy, tomorrow. And the other one is a concern for our country that we can move forward. Thank you.
together.
Joy and a sorrow for those of us who've worked on the elections. Thomas Jefferson has a saying on the federal courthouse downtown, the boisterous sea of liberty is never without a wave.
And one last stone for all the joys and sorrows that remain in our heart. Now is the time for our time for meditation, reflection, and prayer, as is your tradition. So on Tuesday, we have one of the most challenging elections of our lifetimes. And I just wanted to say, I forgot to say in the announcements this morning, but we are having a gathering here at WOF at 5 o'clock. To watch the returns together, because, and we'll have games and things to do, puzzles, and we're asking people to bring comfort food. So it's a way to sort of hold ourselves and be with one another during what will be probably an emotional time. Whatever it takes to get through. So there have been challenging elections in this country before, but so much at stake in this one. And we have worked so hard. This congregation itself sent 2,000 handwritten letters to people urging them to vote. And that is simply remarkable for a small congregation. And I know many of you did much more than that. You sent money, you campaigned, and you urge the people you know to vote. And I imagine that many of you have already voted or that you are planning to vote. And I just want to say, for if there's people here who are thinking of not voting, that please do. The Oregon ballot is long, and there are many elections and ballot measures that are going to affect how public life is conducted in Oregon over the next few years. We have worked very hard. We have done the things we knew to do, that we were able to do, and now we are at the time of waiting and hoping and breathing. And so I just want to invite you to join me in practicing breathing. So we have this as our resource over the next several weeks, probably. And I just want to recognize that for some people, that breathing deeply can cause the release of overwhelming, painful feelings. So if that's your case, just squeeze your hands and feet and release them instead of breath. So let's all start by just breathing deeply and fully down into your belly. Now release your breath very, very slowly. You want your exhale to be longer than your inhale. Doing this activates your parasympathetic nervous system, and that's what calms us down. So we're going to practice a particular way of doing that. So I want you to breathe in through your nose, and I will count. One, two, three, four. Now hold. One, two, three, and then breathe out through pursed lips very, very slowly. One, two, three, four, five, six. So we're going to try that again. Breathe in through your nose. One, two, three, four. hold. One, two, three. Release. One, through your lips. Two, three, four, five, six. Return to your breath. It is always with you, and let it ground you in the days that come. And remember this, you are not alone. Whatever happens, you are not alone. Look around. These people and those who've joined us on Zoom and so many others are together in this. This congregation is a sprawling community of nearly 200 people. We are a part of an association of nearly 250,000. We are part of an even larger community of religious and non-religious people who want a world centered around love and justice and compassion and based on care, not on greed or hate or control. I recently attended a Pacific Northwest ministers gathering and heard the odyssey, the life story, of a wonderful UU minister who's in her early 80s. And she shared that one of the deepest questions of her life has been, why is there evil? Which I'm going to define this as, how can people hurt each other and other creatures and the earth so horrifically without suffering any moral harm? She had studied the question deeply, and she said she never figured it out in a way that satisfied her. But she also said, evil is going to arise in human communities. And we each get to choose to heal the world instead by insisting on justice, by offering care, and by proclaiming love and compassion. So no matter what happens on Tuesday or in the weeks and years following, we can continue in ways small and large to make the world a kinder, healthier place. And we're going to do that together. So we're just going to have a moment of silence where you can practice your breathing. And then after a moment, we will come out singing Return Again. So enter into some quiet breathing on your own.
Song that we're about to sing because it's poetic and full of metaphor. Take Your Medicine by Cloud Cult is a song about the difficult work of facing our invisible stumbling blocks on our path to personal growth and change. These are hidden in our bellies, but they can control our lives, our anxiety, our depression, our addiction to cookies, our toxic habits, our skeletons that we must get in the light. The lyrics encourage us to address these things, take our medicines, do the hard things to discover the new, changed us, these babies sleeping in our ribs. It also encourages us to be kind to ourselves, to pull our fists from our mouths, and to find peace dissolving into evergreens. Please enjoy. May it inspire you, giving you another chance to see.
Get there.
you can take it. Right between the legs. Suck up, suck up.
Get them in the line.
Oh my goodness, oh my goodness. Imagine I have to read something now. That was plenty. Beautiful, thank you so much. Three readings for you today, selected by Reverend Tracy. The first by John Gottman and Nan Silver. It's a fact that people can change only if they feel they are basically liked and accepted as they are. When people feel criticized, disliked, and unappreciated, they are unable to change. Instead, they feel under siege and dig in to protect themselves. Carl Rogers writes, "The curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change." And Carl Jung, "We cannot change anything unless we accept it. Condemnation does not liberate, it oppresses."
So I love that story about Frog and Toad because I can so relate to it. And I have wanted to read this story in service for years, but it has never quite fit. So I've been waiting for the perfect moment, and finally it came. Last year, Michael Morrison, who is joining us online today, welcome Michael, bought my auction sermon. But for lots of ordinary logistical reasons, it has taken till today to be able to give it. And so what Michael asked me to talk about was why we do things we don't want to do. And I've added the corollary, why don't we do the things we want to do? We decide we're going to eat less, but somehow that whole bag of potato chips vanishes during a movie. We decide to floss our teeth, but we just don't. We want to go to the gym, but we seem to just stay on the couch and binge watch that television show instead. We want to volunteer more, get more politically active, nurture our friendships, stop getting so mad about the little things, be kinder. You know, we each have our list. So one of the things that I added to my list during sabbatical was a commitment that I would increase the time that I spent in spiritual practice each day. And the only way this can happen is for me to get up an hour earlier than I usually have. And this means I have to go to bed earlier. And thus begins the battle. So my phone chimes with a friendly reminder just before the new bedtime. And at this point of the evening, I'm on the couch reading or playing games or watching TV. A part of me, that I will call sit on the couch, ignores the bell. She lets the TV roll over to the next episode, or she opens a new game, or she keeps reading. After a few minutes, the part of me nourished by early morning practices, who I will call loves meditation, gets upset. "Hey, love meditation says, really, let's do this. We need to go to bed. We really do want to get up earlier. We'll regret it if we don't." Sit on the couch, channeling a petulant teenager, ignores her. A bit later, love's meditation tries again. "Seriously, we'll be mad at ourselves if we don't get up early. We need to go to bed right now." Sit on the couch, keeps reading or watching or playing. "Are you serious?" love meditation says later, more irritated than ever. "We decided to do this. We made a commitment. What is wrong with you?" finally, at some time ridiculously close to my old bedtime, sit on the couch, grudgingly concedes, and I go to bed. Then so quickly in the morning, my alarm flares. And predictably, I am tired. I just want to sleep. So one of two things happens then. I get up or I don't get up. Either way, the disciplinarian shows up. If I do get up, she begins, "Look how you've messed up the day. Now you won't function well. Your ADHD will be worse. You'll be more irritable. How can you be a decent minister or mom or friend if you can't even manage your basic sleep requirements? Why can't you live up to your commitments to yourself?" If I go back to sleep, the disciplinarian is really much more intense. "So you are going to do all your spiritual practices. You know how important that is. You know they ground you, open your heart, make you more alive. And you are slacking off because why? Oh, because you wanted to watch another episode of some ridiculous sitcom you'll never remember or read another article about how bad the world is. What is really wrong with you?" So I hope this conversation does not echo any conversations you've ever had with yourself. But I do suspect for most of us it might sound a little familiar. So why does this happen? Why can't we just decide, "I want to do this. I want to be this way. I want to change this habit," and then just do it? Why is it so hard? Why aren't we more in charge of ourselves? Our culture really values willpower and self-control. And we, as a culture, looks down on people who can't manage themselves. It has this idea that people who have are a larger size just can't control their eating and thus are less valuable. It looks down on those who are addicted to something for just not saying no. And this gets inside each of us, into our bodies and minds and thoughts. And we think, why don't we have more willpower? What's wrong with us? Why? And then we think less of ourselves. Here's the thing about willpower. The act of willing ourselves to do something that at least big parts of us don't want to do is only in limited supply. They've done a lot of research on this. We only have so much willpower. And some people are born with more and some people are born with less before you have to recharge. But everybody just has a limited supply. So using willpower to change ourselves takes a lot of energy. So we might have willpower in the morning, but by evening we just can't make ourselves do whatever it is anymore. Or maybe we can do it for a week, but we can't do it for 3 weeks. And our culture is so luring with so many wonderful things that just aren't great for us. So we have to use willpower all the time. Just think about a trip to the grocery store. Or just opening your phone. We then judge ourselves or others judge us for overindulging in what we don't want to do because they harm us or aren't satisfying in the long term. This is a really terrible trap of consumer culture. There are lots of reasons we don't do what we want to do. But one of the more significant reasons is because so many unconscious patterns are encoded into our brains and bodies. The song this morning talked about it being in our bellies, and it is in all those places. And they determine how we feel and how we think and how we act. And this was a very clever evolutionary trick. So much is happening in any given moment, and our conscious brain is pretty limited in what it can process. So our brains mastered shortcuts. Something happens and our brain just carries out that pattern that it has learned. We walk into the house, hang up our coat, and put down our bag. We don't think about this. We don't decide to do that. We've done it hundreds of times. It just happens. And it's not just the mundane that we act unconsciously. It is most things, including our emotional responses. So if we see an unwashed person in dirty clothes walking on the street, we might, unless we have experiences with the unhoused or mentally ill, feel immediately uncomfortable. We may look away or move to the other side of the street, which is pretty horrible for the person because on top of everything else in their lives that isn't working, they feel like a pariah. But this really happens to us before our conscious mind makes any sort of decision. We just do it. Or imagine an intense argument between others that we're witnessing. So we may react by recoiling or freezing or getting upset or trying to fix it. And this all happens usually before we even think. We just kind of go into our mode, our stress, conflict mode. And this is our brains and bodies just automatically enacting a pattern. This situation is expressed perfectly in this morning song. These are the things I keep hidden in my belly, and I can't see how they control my life. We can't unless we really pay attention and bring those patterns into the light. Our experiences shape our brains. When a baby is born, only half of their brain is formed. The other half is all created by experiences. When we've responded in particular ways to experiences over time, we build neural pathways that become thicker and stronger as we use them over and over. The more entrenched the pathway, it determines what we think and how we feel and what we do. Our brains change with our experiences, but at the same time, those experiences create habits of a perception which then start shaping the experiences we have. So, for example, if we develop pathways, particularly in young childhood, that tell us most people are judging us, what we notice when people are around us is things that confirm that and dismisses the evidence that they think positively of us. Then this unhelpful, I am disliked or judged, neural pathway gets even stronger, trapping us into a circle of perception that is unhelpful and untrue and difficult to break. Mostly our foundational pathways were developed in the experiences of our childhood, particularly in those first few years. And they are usually deep and wide and unconscious. They are hidden in our bellies. Other pathways develop as our biological desire for pleasure pulls us towards certain activities. These pathways of desires often become large from heavy use. And remember that those who want us to buy things work very hard to exploit this human tendency. There is so much research on how to do it and how to implement that. Most of us struggle to stop pursuing a pleasure so we can enjoy other types of satisfaction. And unfortunately, some of us become addicted. Our bodies and brains get caught in a loop where we can't stop eating or drinking or smoking or shopping or watching pornography. Other, nearly almost always unhelpful pathways develop during traumatic events. Trauma is a stressful or dangerous situation that overwhelms our body and brain's ability to cope. These events can create patterns of behavior that are simply continuous responses to the trauma that we can't just consciously stop. It takes over. Like when a person who was in a war gets angry and explodes anytime somebody walks behind them, even when they know this is ridiculous. They just can't stop. Sometimes we don't even remember the trauma or don't associate traumatic responses with trauma. And then we get aggravated at ourselves when we can't stop. So as we strive to do better, be better, feel better, act better, we will make decisions in our conscious mind that we want to do something differently. And this decision creates a very tenuous neural pathway that has determined, in my case, that I must get up an hour earlier. But I also have this really thick neural pathway, or really it's a network, but we're just going to say narrow pathway here, that has really enjoyed being on the couch in the evenings, lightly entertained for a long time. I think I developed these patterns during COVID. And that is the pattern of behavior that is truly in charge. It has hundreds and hundreds of evenings of firing in just that way. It is old and it is strong. It's not hard to see why change is difficult in this situation. But then I actually make it worse due to another strong brain network, my long practice of trying to discipline myself and use willpower to do what I don't want to do. When I get upset at well-entrenched patterns, I give it attention. And attention is how we build pathways. It's not how we take them down. And this practice of, you know, being upset with myself and trying to, you know, power over, doesn't strengthen the new narrow pathway at all. But it does make me feel bad, like I'm not strong enough to make the changes I want, and then that makes it even harder to do it. So what does one do? You will be happy to know that there are some actual ways around this. And the first step, which you may hate, but here it is, the first step is you need to love yourself. In our readings today, very well-known psychologists, John Gottman, Carl Rogers, and Carl Jung, all remind us of this. Because here is the thing. Our brains were made to learn and change throughout our whole lives. And this is called neuroplasticity. But science has shown that neuroplasticity, to actually work, requires feeling safe and cared for. We do not change when we feel threatened and defensive. So we need to love ourselves. We need to love those things we really like about ourselves, which is pretty easy to do. And we need to really love and care for the self parts of ourselves we don't like very much or that we want to change. Remember that all the way, it's really, really important to remember that all the ways we are came into being because our particular essence, spirit, soul, nervous system, genetics, however you think of what our being is, reacted to things that happened to us or around us. And our bodies learned how to respond, to survive or thrive, and created networks of being that and ways to react that got laid down in our neural pathways that control our whole body. This includes the big things, how we fall in love, have relationships, deal with conflict, and the little things, like where we put the milk in the fridge or eat our pizza. We may do things or behave in ways that harm ourselves or others, and we really, really might decide we do not want to do that anymore. But at one point, those ways of being were our response to something. And at one point, they helped us feel safe or powerful, or they felt good or exciting or comforting, which we really wanted. And we really need to respect and honor that. We need to bring all those parts into the light. If we don't, that part of us that's been in charge gets rigid and unable to change. And that part that wants to change has a hard time competing because it's really weak and it's very inexperienced. And I can really feel this in me when I pay attention. Sit on the couch actually does feel defensive, particularly when love meditation starts nagging. Sit on the couch is all like, hey, this is my time. No one asked me about this change. So we need to bring our patterns into the light. So I asked, sit on the couch, what is it you need? And I actually got an earful. I want to relax, she told me. I want to chill out. I don't want every minute of our lives to be structured. You try and make everything productive. And I thought that that could perhaps be fair. So there is in me two parts of me. One that wants this unscheduled, non-productive time. And the other wants grounding in spiritual practice. And so the next step is managing that conflict. So I've come up with a solution. I've stopped being productive earlier in the evenings. Sit on the couch is pretty happy with that. And I've started going to bed earlier on quite a few days. Not always, but enough that I'm slowly building that new neural pathway that goes to bed and gets up earlier. And I'm really learning to view that inner structural with more affection and humor. This loving approach can work with all sorts of things, from changing food and exercise habits to unhelpful emotional responses and to relationship patterns. However, sometimes we really cannot make the changes by ourselves. My example is pretty simple. There's not a lot of emotional baggage around it or anything. But lots of our ways of being are more entrenched and more complicated, particularly ones we cannot see well or have been there since childhood or were set by trauma or addiction. When that happens, we require a lot more love and a lot more support and a lot more care. And sometimes this can be as simple as accountability between friends or being in a support group. Some support groups that really work on that are like 12-step programs, but there's many other kinds of support groups. Other people can provide us with the love and structure that increases the possibility of neuroplasticity in our brain. It's also helpful to speak out aloud our goals for change or write them down and repeat this regularly. It helps build those pathways that we're trying to build. Sometimes, however, we really do need professional help to help us create a new way. Sometimes our ways of being are protected by very old wounds, skeletons that we have very little interest in bringing into the light because they just hurt too much. Other times we are gripped by these very complex patterns of addiction that usually really require other people to help us break through. And I just want to say that all of this are important reasons that I am committed to religious community. We come together week after week in caring community to remind ourselves what matters most and how we most want to live. By doing this, we are building the neural pathways for love, for healing, for kindness and justice so we can live into those ideals. We remember that when we want and need to transform, we can lean on each other. What we do together is important, holy work. Let us sing together. 1021, Lean on Me.
Till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you understand. We all need somebody to lean on.
We extinguish the flame of our chalice, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with you until we meet again. May the front face the back, and we will sing our closing words. Carry the flame.